Talking with Bob Young, Chief Economist of American Farm Bureau. Bob, 15 was a tough year as far as farm income was concerned. What happened?
Well, you know, we ended up, I think we've all understood that for quite a while, we had very strong growth in demand, certainly coming from the ethanol sector, but also coming out of China. I think we rolled in and we, you know, we're kind of using up stuff faster than we could grow it. We got to about 13 or so, and we started producing more than we were using. Certainly built up those stocks again in 14, and finally 15, you know, I think really kind of came along and kind of hit us. I think our challenge rolling forward is, you know, that we are going to face that problem, that, you know, we've got production capacity that we can grow a lot of stuff. And any time we get to the stage where demand growth is flat, agriculture always, whatever the level is, it can be at, you know, for corn, it can be at 10 billion bushels, it can be at 15 billion bushels. But once it goes flat, we certainly seem to have a way to grow just that much and plus a little bit more. And that's the problem that we're facing. We're just, you know, stocks are building. And until we end up with a weather phenomenon someplace around the world, you know, we're going to have a challenge getting prices to move for us.
Do you anticipate that we are small enough in numbers of sizable farmers yet that those farmers would voluntarily cut production at a time when they're losing money?
Well, I think we are at a stage where, you know, at these price levels, you're going to have some growers are going to need to talk about lowering their cost structure. And, you know, there's only so many levers you can pull when it comes to lowering your cost structure. We can talk about having conversation with our landlords and maybe trying to get a little lower land rental rates. We can, you know, on the input, on the energy-related inputs, you know, because energy costs are so low, you know, there's not a whole lot more we can do on that front. We can probably have conversations back with the folks that are providing us with seed. And, you know, do you necessarily, and you know the folks are going to be upset with me for saying this, but, you know, do you have to have necessarily the latest and greatest gee whiz varieties or, you know, are some varieties that are substantially less in cost but, you know, still pretty good yield providers? Is that good enough for us to say let's move in that direction? So I think it is going to require us kind of looking at all the different components. I'd also say that I think because our yes, we've built up substantial stocks, even at the levels that we're at today, we are also using a lot of product. And so in corn, for example, in particular, if we were to talk about a 10 billion bushel yield hit, which is not a lot, you know, that'd be enough to kind of tighten things up a bunch. And I would think you'd begin to talk about prices moving, et cetera. So I do think that over a five-year period of time, in fact, I'd even say probably at some point in time over the next 3 years, we're going to talk about corn prices that are going to be up above $5. I don't know when. You know, give me your weather forecast, and I'll tell you when that number is going to occur. But I just really think that opportunity is going to present itself. So we need to talk about marketing our grain, maybe in a little bit different fashion than we have before, maybe lengthening out our marketing cycles, maybe think about you know, 2 years, 3 years in front of us, use crop insurance to kind of make sure we're protecting ourselves on the other side for, you know, when those droughts would occur or that we'd end up with a crop yield hit. But, you know, I just think we're going to have to be very, very sharp as we roll forward.
What about currency valuation? What kind of impact will that have?
Absolutely a factor. It's just going to make it that much tougher for us to be able to move product. You know, at the crop outlook session that we had yesterday, we had Alan Brugler put up a slide that basically said, here's what, in real prices, the farmers in Brazil are getting for their soybeans as opposed to what we're getting for our soybeans here. And their prices are as high as they were at some of our highest price levels here in the United States when you price them in reals. Now, I understand that their input costs, you know, look substantially different than ours do because of that change in value of dollar or that change of currency values. So, you know, it is a two-edged sword. But it is going to make it that much tougher for us to be able to export product. And I think as you look at, you know, does the Fed bump rates another, you know, twice or three times in 2016? I don't know. But every time you make those kinds of moves, it would probably move towards strengthening the dollar. Plus, the dollar is kind of the currency of choice. You know, it is the reserve currency for everybody to run to. So I just think it's going to be a factor. It is going to make ag products that much tougher for us to export around the world.
And for our cattle producers, where do you see the market really leveling out on for live cattle and feeders, but mainly for our cow-calf producers out there that are they're seeing good prices, but not as good as a few years ago, but where do you see that leveling out at?
And I don't think they're going to be able to see those, you know, those kinds of great prices that we had 2 or 3 years or so ago. I think we're going to see those prices continue to move a little bit lower. You know, the only upside that you could talk about is that as, you know, as a downside for the green guys, that as we talk about these very low feed costs, that it does let you, you know, spend a little bit more for that feeder animal. How much lower would it go from where we are here today? You know, kind of tell me how fast the herd decides to come back, how much the impact that we've had of the, you know, the frost and the really cold weather that we had, you know, how much that's going to affect the cow herd, et cetera, and the calf crop as we roll forward. Those are all kinds of factors that a guy'd have to kind of work through before he'd come up with a good number for you.
The on the cattle industry, did it surprise you that we saw the tipping point there middle of the year with the heavier weight cattle seemingly just pushing us off the edge?
A little bit, but you know, again, once you get that much production trying to roll through the system, and I think for the cattle guys, how do I want to say this the right way? To a certain extent, I think they were living on borrowed time. You know, that we had the cutback in production on the hog side because of some of the virus issues, et cetera. The chicken guys, you know, folks will tell you that, you know, we'd gone back so many generations, you know, and cutting back and trying to rationalize the size of that herd that, you know, or that flock that, you know, now we're to the stage where all that, and we were last summer, that all that supply was now kind of finally getting released, and the beef guys were running into the face of that. I think it was kind of inevitable that cliff was coming at some point in time. And we probably were lucky that it lasted as long as it did.
Bob Young, what about crop insurance? Is it at risk at this time for the American farmer?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think you know, who was it that said, you know, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. You know, when it comes time for Congress to talk about, you know, further spending cuts or whatever. You know, crop insurance, I think, is extremely vulnerable. Almost every budget recommendation that we've had come out of this administration has talked about going to crop insurance in one form or another. As you know, as we went through this last budget process on the Hill, you know, we came back and they were going to take $3 billion out without even asking anybody in ag. We did get that restored, but, you know, just the fact that it's on the block, you know, and it is, again, that's where all the money is. And so I do think we're going to continually have to fight off issues on that front as we roll forward.
Chinese demand.
Well, you know, that's not so clear a picture, I don't think. You know, if we were talking about copper or we were talking about coal or, you know, kind of hard commodities, clearly they're shifting the structure of their economy as they move away from those kinds of big term, big scale investment programs and infrastructure programs, or their, you know, really heavy reliance on manufacturing for export purposes. As they shift to a more consumer oriented economy, you know, yeah, we've had very rapid growth in bean exports. You know, it's 65% or so of all beans now that go onto a ship end up finding their way to China. I'm not so sure rolling forward that the ag picture is necessarily quite so bleak, because as they do shift to a consumer economy, they are going to talk about, you know, I want to eat out more. I want to, again, further changes in my diet, you know, that kind of good stuff. And so I think that might actually argue for, you know, ag exports, you know, remaining fairly strong. I think just because of the general economic, I won't say decline, but softening that we've had there, we may not see the growth rate in bean exports, for example, that we've seen in the past. But I do think that their demand is going to continue to grow as we roll forward.
Regarding TPP, mm-hmm. Ambassador Vetter, very, very rosy picture for U.S. agriculture. That's what the administration is painting. Are you buying that there's that much gain with this particular agreement?
Well, we're still kind of working through our numbers and working through our analysis. But I will say that and our board has certainly taken a position that it supports the agreement. And they took that position because, you know, we were very firm with them that I think very clearly this is a positive for U.S. agriculture. Our beef guys, our pork guys, to a certain extent, you know, some of the dairy guys, you know, without question, this is a gain for U.S. agriculture. You know, on some of the crop side, you know, maybe not quite as clear.
I think it still ends up being a positive for the sector as a whole, though, without question. The beef gains, the meat gains, I think, are so strong that you just have to kind of come out as a positive for the sector.
I just have one more question, and that is mergers in agribusiness. Mm-hmm. It looks like we're on the verge, if they're approved, of more than one merger. How do you see it?
I think without question. You know, obviously we've got the Dow-DuPont conversation going on. Monsanto is trying to buy something, you know, one way or another. And I think when you look at the, you know, returns to the sector, what those input companies, for example, whether it be equipment or whether it be other inputs, were, you know, how they were able to grow and their revenue streams over the course of the last 5, 6, 8 years or so, you know, they were doing reasonably okay for themselves. Now that you're into a downturn side for the sector, and without question, we're in a downturn for the sector. You know, all those input costs, as we talked about, when we talked about what's the farm got to do, all those reductions in costs are reductions in revenue streams for those guys. So I think without question, you're going to have to talk about some consolidation, some mergers, et cetera. And again, from an organizational perspective, if it makes business sense for them to go through a merger, an acquisition, then, you know, yeah, you'd rather have six choices six choices as opposed to the five choices. But, you know, again, if it makes business sense, then it probably makes business sense. I would say on the Dow-DuPont merger in particular, you know, that actually may end up being a situation where it increases competition. Because you're going to talk about an ag firm rolling out of that's going to be big enough that it can, in fact, kind of directly compete with Monsanto. Whereas today, you know, you kind of got Monsanto and then you got the other guys. So that may end up well giving us a very different picture. I'd also say in today's, you know, kind of regulatory environment and our litigation environment, you know, you've got to have a company with very deep and very patient pockets to take a new product to market. And, you know, okay, this is probably going to be a company. It's probably going to take companies the size of Monsanto. The anti-GMO folks, the folks that are coming up with all the kind of legal challenges to a new product, are forcing that kind of consolidation to occur. So, okay, what did you think was going to happen next? So, yes, I think we're going to continue to see more. Are we going to continue to kind of watch those? And if there are some particular markets where we think we're getting – you know, I don't know what a guy says is too much competition or too much consolidation, but, you know, we'll continue to monitor and make our views known when the appropriate time occurs.